The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Live Off the Record with Shivago Lang is brought to you by RF Bank and Trust and Royal Star Assurance. You're not alone. All up if you feel like you been down the
same road. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us here on Z Live today. This is Carlos Mackey sitting in for Shivago Lang, who could not be in today. Thank you so much for being with us. We want to thank Almighty God for the opportunity, health and strength, and for Mr. Lang for thinking enough of me to ask me to host on his behalf today. Today, Z Live is brought to you by a number of sponsors. Those will be provided before and after our break or before and during our break today. But again, we do want to thank you for joining with us today. Today is going to be an open line day. We want to hear back from you. There are a number of things that are happening around us that are important for us to take note of, and we need to hear from you. I want to hear from you. I think our entire country needs to have a dialogue on some things that are happening here at home, but also abroad, that are going to be very, very salient, we believe, over the upcoming months. First and foremost, want to get a Bahamian perspective on what is happening over there in Ukraine. There's been a lot of conversation around the personalities involved with regard to the Russian president, with regard to what we may think about a mindset that is had by Russians, though I doubt many of us have actually interacted in significant ways with Russians, and also what we consider about President Zelensky and the Ukrainian mindset. Obviously, a lot of us have been informed by the media with regard to these things. So in some respects, our perspective on what's happening over there is very much personality driven, media coverage driven. But I want us to take a hard look at what this conflict represents from the economic side. And there's two sides to that economics. One, the global, or let me not say global, but the Western versus, as they would say, Eastern efforts to control the war and the narrative about the war. The level of spending that's happening to arm Ukraine, to for Russia to fortify its munitions. I think that there's a very interesting conversation that needs to be had around that, because we are in a region where there is, in some places, abject poverty. And I mean abject poverty. As a matter of fact, the Bahamas suffers from a very significant illegal immigration situation. Yes, it is illegal. If you break my laws by coming here and you're not following the process that I set out for you to come here, that is illegal. So you could talk about migrants and human rights and all of that. Yes, I respect all of that. We are all God's children. However, the Bible tells us that he made nations and tongues and peoples. So we as a Bahamian people, a Bahamian nation, are a nation of laws, not a nation of personalities and opinions. We are a nation of laws. If we as Bahamians do things to break our laws, that is illegal. Likewise, somebody comes here against the things that we have set out, that is illegal. So we have an illegal immigration problem. And I say that with no malice whatsoever towards Haiti and the Haitian people, and no malice towards anybody else who is here, because we don't only have a Haitian immigration problem. Quiet as it's kept, you have a lot of persons from a lot of other places who seek better lives for themselves, whether that is fleeing economic poverty or whether it's fleeing different kinds of turmoil. They come here and find, even with all of our flaws in our society, this to be a place where they can be comfortable, where they can be settled, where they can flourish. So as we think about the impacts of illegal immigration, of the strains that that has on our, what we would call financial ecosystem, our social ecosystem, our jobs and labor market, in terms of what we would call the impact of low-cost illegal labor on the wage structure in the country, how do we feel about the amount of spending that nobody seems to be batting an eye about to fight a war halfway around the world? And there's not really any significant cry for places like Haiti, Honduras, and even parts of Mexico for there to be significant investment in those places. I think that's a question that we have to really, really get to the bottom of. I mean, even in the United States, there are people who, I have friends who live in the United States. One of the daughters of one of my friends is at college right now, and she made an interesting remark about the fact that they still don't have supplies of clean water that is reliable throughout of all of Flint, Michigan. So you have billions of dollars being spent on a military campaign halfway around the world, and there are real impacts to all of our countries. And we just had CARICOM here the other day, and we're not really having, in my estimation, a very honest conversation about priorities and why it's so important to defend the so-called democracy in Ukraine and the territorial integrity of Ukraine, while our and the economies, our economy, our social infrastructure, and that of the United States and elsewhere is being significantly impacted right here at home and close to home. I think that's a very interesting discussion that we're going to need to broach. I would like for us to just think it through and to talk about it, because I hear Bahamians advocating for all sorts of things, and we're getting caught up in the personality considerations of President Putin and President Xi and President Biden, all of whom the average Bahamian probably will never meet in three or four lifetimes. But there are real impacts when countries, large countries, that are neighbors and friendly neighbors, and countries with whom we may only have passing interests and partnerships, and some with whom we are establishing stronger ties, make decisions to the tunes of billions of dollars with regard to a war that, in a lot of respects, appears as though it's going to be waged for a long time. And there's a significant chance of stalemate after lots of blood and treasure and time has been spent. So I want to get your perspectives on that and the thought process, because if we remember, there was an earthquake in Haiti in 2010, if I'm not mistaken. And I don't know that Haiti ever got the $10 or $12 billion that was pledged by the international community for a building. Yes. Things have happened and there's no infrastructure in Haiti, but I mean, in a year, they have literally wiped towns off of the map in Ukraine. And we're at a place where, even with that, there is funding for power to be restored in places. Yes, they are in some cities, the power is being restored even as the fighting is going on. The water is being restored even as the fighting is going on. And some of these cities, intermediate and small towns and cities, have been wiped off the map. Yet, there is a willingness to spend that money there. And again, I'm not saying that the lives of the Ukrainian people and the struggle of the Ukrainian people is not important. The question for us, as we sit down and evaluate our place in the world and what we advocate for, and the things that we think about, and the way that we ask our government and those who represent us, elected and appointed, these are the things that I think we need to think about from the perspective of our friends and some of our partners and some of our acquaintances internationally are spending millions and billions of dollars are we advocating vigorously enough for the things that really should be priorities closer to home? Just a question. So we definitely want to get your perspective on that. And then the flip side, because I did tell you there were two sides. What are we doing as individuals, as communities, as a country for the inevitability of the inflation impact of this war that appears as though it's going to drag out for a long time? So what do I mean by that? Fertilizer production is concentrated in a few places, and a couple of places that fertilizer production for agricultural input that is very significant happens to be Russia and Ukraine. As a matter of fact, Ukraine is also one of the largest producers of wheat for the world, and the UN Food Program, if I'm not mistaken, previously relied significantly on Ukrainian wheat to meet a lot of their demand out of places like sub-Saharan Africa and elsewhere, where the arid temperatures continue to result in drought and so forth. Excuse me. So we're looking at a situation where at some point, and we've already seen it, but at some point, not only are prices going to continue to escalate, and we see that because the United States Federal Reserve is saying now that with rates having been now or having now eclipsed the what they were for the last 30 years, they're still thinking that they're going to have to go higher. Still thinking that they're going to have to go higher. So what does that mean? And eventually, if fertilizer and wheat and all of these inputs coming out of Russia, who is heavily sanctioned, and remember, Russia is a major oil producer, that's going to eventually begin to have more impacts. If we continue to sanction Russia and there's no production coming out of Ukraine and the fertilizer is also not coming out of Russia and Ukraine, at what point does the food shortages, not simply food price inflation, but food shortages, at what point do we begin to pay attention and try to figure out what is our plan? These are just my questions, because everybody is taking an opinion on the personalities, but are we actually really taking the situation itself serious? So again, we want you to call in, dial in to the show. This is going to be a call-in show. Again, whatever it is that you feel you would want to talk about, and maybe you don't want to talk about Russia and Ukraine at all. You don't want to talk about immigration. You don't want to talk about inflation. We are here, this open line show today. So again, please call in. Please dial in. We want to hear from you. We're going to take a quick break. And once we get back from the break, hopefully we'll have some calls in, because we do want to have this discussion. We live in a world where I think for a lot of time, Bahamians don't really think about the knock-on impacts of what's happening. We continue to go about our day-to-day lives as though we live in our own bubble. And yes, the Bahamas is a beautiful place. I would rather be nowhere than here. But we don't live alone. That doesn't mean that I want to be with everybody, but I respect the fact that we've done some things over the last 100, 200 years that have made the world interconnected. So in that reality, how do we deal with what likely is going to come? So again, we're going to go to our first break, and we want you to call in, dial in. This is Z Live with Shivago Lang. This is Carlos Mackey sitting in for Shivago today. Today is an open line Tuesday. Call in, text in. We're looking forward to hearing from you. This is Z Live. We'll be right back right after this break. Everybody.
With so much going on in the world today, only accepting cash at your business can be risky. Let Fidelity offer you and your customers safety, convenience, and the flexibility of a fixed or mobile terminal. Take it with you, on the move and on the go. because business should never stop. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit us at any of our branches. Fidelity.
Carifta Tickets. The 58th Carifta Games is coming. April 7th to April 10th. Tickets are on sale now. Online at carifta50.com or at the Thomas A. Robinson National Stadium, Western Grand Entrance. For more details, email tickets@carifta50.com or call 605-4051.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand.
Good afternoon. We're back here on Z Live with Shivago Lang. This is Carlos Mackey sitting in for Shivago. And today we're talking about the impacts of what global decisions are made and what our response should be individually, locally, as well as our international advocacy. I think we have a call on the line. And again, this is an open line Tuesday, so feel free. You don't have to talk about that, the inflation and international impacts. I think we have a call on the line. Call, are you there?
Good day, Honorable Carlos Mackey. Your opening was very thoughtful. You well studied it, and I think you know more than a lot of people who sit in Parliament today what's going on in the world. So our question to you would be, at least my question would be, how could illegal immigration or immigrants in the country contribute to the shortfalls of the taxes that they want to try to implement on us Bahamian people who already are overwhelmed with these existing taxes? We'll sit back and listen because you are well-versed, and I know you know the answer.
Thank you. Thank you so much, ma'am. I appreciate your positive words. I don't know that I'm much more well-versed than our parliamentarians. I do think we have to give them credit because there's a lot of information that they come across and that is brought to them. So I'll be respectful, as respectful as I can in that regard. I do think that our parliamentarians are trying. They get lots of information from a lot of different places. But as you've asked me to, I think that is a very interesting discussion with regard to taxes. I don't think that we can look at immigration as a single matter. We have to look at what we would call the interrelations and complexities. So let's talk about immigration reform, not simply immigration policy, but immigration reform. I think the first thing, you brought up a very significant point, Carla. What is it that we want to have? So I don't know that we have made a determination on what we want to have as far as what our country will look like in, let's call it, 20, 25 years. So the first thing we have to do is behave. And we've had an exercise for the National Development Plan. For whatever reason, that has not necessarily taken off. But I do think, even if it comes from the political directorate, somebody has to stick a flag in the ground and say, listen, here's what the Bahamas will look like in 25 years. And here is the roadmap of how we're going to get there. I think once you have that, and we even take a look at our population, right? We know that Bahamians, by and large, are barely reproducing at what we would call replacement rate, which I think is supposed to be somewhere around 2.5, 2.8 children for women. I don't know how you have a point of a person, but let's just go with three kids, right, for family. Raising three kids in the Bahamas is hard, especially if you're a single mother. So we have to look comprehensively at what does our population need to be in 25 years based on what we want our economy to be in terms of the size and the diversity of the economic activities that we are going to be engaged in. And then let's take a look at, based on what policies, based on what we have, how much of that do we realistically think as we reform education, we are going to be able to satisfy our labor demands for the productivity that we want via Bahamian labor. We have to think that through because if we make a determination that we're not going to support Bahamians being able to sensibly and not relying on social assistance, but sensibly be able to fend for themselves and their families as economic actors, then we will have to make some hard decisions around our immigration policy with regard to immigrants primarily taking up the slack. So whether or not we want to deal with it, there has to be a wholesome discussion about where the country is going. Having this conversation in a vacuum around the fact that we're upset over shanty towns or illegal squatting, over the fact that we can't get the right answers around how many work permits and what types are being issued. And that's a very key point of information that our government continues to withhold, and for no good reason. We can have those arguments, but they don't necessarily solve the root. The root for us is, as the Bible says, without vision, the people will perish. We have to have a vision for the country. We have to make some very deliberate considerations around how we as Bahamians are going to fill that vision. If we say that we want an economy that is a $50 billion economy, we have to decide the industries that we're going to prioritize. And we have to think about the labor force and the technological advances that we want to be ahead of in order for that to be realistic. And then based on all of that, we have to say, okay, what are we doing to support Bahamian families? And once we prioritize Bahamian families, then we say, okay, there's a gap here. Based on this gap, how do we now conform our immigration policy to say who we're going to allow in, what skills do they have, and so forth? In the immediate term, even before we goal set and all of that, what we can do is border control. That is a key. So I'm somebody that, based on the Bible says, do not mistreat the stranger that is in your land, right? And we are people that the majority of our population has descended from slavery. So the Bible is very direct in admonishing us not to mistreat them. But not mistreating them does not mean that we give everybody a free pass. So there has to be, one, border control, and two, some form of registration. Registration and what we will call regularization. Regularization does not necessarily mean naturalization, where we make everybody a permanent resident or a citizen. But this idea that we can continue to allow our borders to be uncontrolled and for us to not know who is here and where they are, and for us, on the third point in the immediate term, to not think through and begin to designate what we would call proper housing areas, because the shanty towns are acceptable, but until we have made some determination in our laws and in international laws, we have acceded to be a member of the United Nations and we have acceded to these various accords on how we treat immigrants and all of these things, we're going to have to figure out a reasonable solution on housing. I have some ideas. I don't know that they are fully formed because there is a thought that we can do something along the lines of a guest worker program. But obviously, there are islands where that make better sense, and there is capacity for that in line with our agricultural needs in order for food, what we would call, it's food security. Not that we will be self-sufficient, but we would be food secure. So again, in the immediate term, border control, that's primary. There has to be border control. There has to be some level of registration, not some level. There needs to be complete registration of who is among us. And there has to be a solution around housing and the work permits. And once we figure that part out in the immediate term, that's one track that has to be. But simultaneously, there has to be a vision track. Without a vision track, we'll probably end up, no matter how good we control the borders and we register everybody, we may have 5 to 10 years of success. And in 2033, we'll start to see the same problem start to crop back up again. So thank you, caller, for that. Immigration has to be considered in the context of, in my view, national development. Because if we say that we simply don't want immigrants, one, that's unnecessarily xenophobic, and two, it discounts the fact that there are immigrants of all stripes, even illegal immigrants. And yes, I continue to say they are illegal, that are making great contributions to the country. We're not discounting that. But simply making a great contribution does not discount the fact that you are breaking the law. So we have to figure out a way, and there are ways to do it. Like I said, there can be ways that we go through regularizations. Those folks pay fines, and that's something that you talked about, caller, with regard to taxation on behemoths. But we are going to have to figure something out. I see that we have some text coming in. Let me take a look at those. Those actually aren't clear, but I think we may have another call on the line. Not sure. Call, are you there? Call, are you there?
Yes, sir. Good evening. How you doing?
Doing excellent. Welcome to Z Live. Thank you for calling in.
Yes. What is your view on national development? I heard you made mention national. Can you describe, in your view, what that is? And another question, is there an attempt to increase the Bahamian population by allowing immigrants to come in and make them and nationalize them? Because the average Bahamians are not having the amount of children that we once used to. And I said that because if we're going to take that approach, because at the end of the day, when those immigrants come in, a lot of them, they still add some burden on the taxpayers. National insurance probably are not being properly paid. When we look at the health, and then when we look at education system, so the government still have to put some monies into helping these people along the way. So if you're going to take that approach, why not give an incentive to the Bahamians to say, well, okay, we're going to have some tax breaks so that the Bahamians can now have more babies so that they can have the necessary money and whatever they need to sustain themselves to increase the family population. Why are we taking the immigrant approach to increase our population when we're looking at national development? Because I believe in the interim, that's not a good idea. In 40 years from now, what would the Bahamas look like in terms of who will actually be the minority or the majority in terms of Bahamians? Thank you. I'll hang up and listen.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, caller. I will take your questions with the second one first. So I actually agree with you. So a lot of us who live and travel to the U.S. need to understand that even large countries do things to incentivize things that are important. So, for instance, the United States incentivizes home ownership. So there is something when you do your taxes that's called your mortgage interest deduction, right? So you get a tax credit or you get a deduction, as it were, excuse me, from your payable taxes based on your mortgage interest, right? Because they want more persons. The policy has been that we want to encourage Americans. The U.S. government has said through our taxation policy, we want to encourage Americans to own homes. Similarly, there is a benefit to being married, filing jointly, and having dependents and so forth. So that encourages, in some respects, responsible working people to couple up and to have children and to raise those and rear those children in an environment where they are together. Relationally, physically, it is beneficial under the tax code to be a taxpayer, a head of household, who has dependents living in your house. So that's tax policy in their context, that is income tax base. Call, I agree with you. I am of the view, whether we do it through NIB, whether we do it through deductions related to, or not deductions, excuse me, but reductions on VAT and duty, and even at the counter, it's not that complicated. We can figure out ways to do it. And yes, the retailers may cry and get upset. I am invested and One of my companies, we have the blessing to be able to work in a retail space. Yes, there will be an adjustment, but the fact remains, even if we only do it for the priority items around housing, certain kinds of clothing, food, and energy costs, there should be some consideration around married couples, right? Married couples that are both persons are Bahamian, or one is a Bahamian citizen, or however we decide to, because that again brings up a whole different delicate issue, right? But let's just say if both persons are here legally as a citizen, as citizens, or as persons who one of the couple is a citizen and the other is a legal resident, right? We should be looking at encouraging families to be, as you would say, have an easier time making it in the Bahamas. Because the reality is, a lot of Bahamian women have indicated that, you know what, and I hear women, professional women in various settings that I'm in, say, I give my husband 1 to 2 children max. Max, because it's too expensive and it's too time to, and it's hard raising children in the modern Bahamas. And that's something that we're going to have to figure out. So I do agree with you. I think there can be NIB, there can be taxes that we levy on different things in relation to immigrants. So maybe there is a child care portion of the levy on immigration fees that for persons that are getting work permits, how that needs to work. Obviously, there'll have to be some legislative wrangling because our politicians love to make the excuse that everything goes in a consolidated fund. That's fine. But you can always track the money that is coming in from a particular thing, take a percentage, and that's a legal, that becomes legally earmarked to support family expenses. Very quickly, though, because we do have another call on, when you talk about national development, I'll give you my very simple definition. National development is a process by which a people go through a series of deliberate, planned changes that improve the conditions of their society, their economy, and most important, their national character with a deliberate end in mind. So for me, national development is a process where people deliberately go through a series of planned changes to bring them to an expected end. That's what I consider to be national development. And it's not any expected end. It's a series of planned improvements to the economy, to the way they relate to each other in society, and to the national character and culture. That's what I consider to be national development. We have another call on the line. Call, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Godly Day, this is Doc in the Waste along with you, Carl. What's your name is again?
Thank you. Thank you so much. This is Carlos Mackey.
Carlos, right. We need justice law in this country. Now, you spoke of our border, right?
Yes, sir.
We got to control the land first. Let me show you something. I was teaching voluntary to several places, right? Two
yes,
places
sir.
In which I taught, right? You had more un-Bahamians there, sun-Bahamians.
Mm.
And it made me feel bad. One of the youngsters that were there, he couldn't speak a word of English. You understand what I'm saying? So what I'm
yes,
saying,
sir.
A lot of foolishness is happening in this Bahamas, and the government are not doing anything about it. Secondly, right, we don't want to just copy other countries in order for us to survive, because we're not going to survive. We're going to fall. My last
Indeed.
Point is, right, not physically blind, right?
Yes.
I wondered why there were no place in the Bahamas medical entity where I can go to and have, you know, a procedure done as a Bahamian instead of always have to be United States of America. Okay? Mm. That's a bunch of bull. So what I am saying, we need good leaders. Leaders would want to work for the Bahamian people, and you start from the ground so you could see the problem. Okay?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you so much, caller. I do agree with you. I make no statement with regards specifically to our parliamentarians who are in now. I don't know many of them, only one or two of them I can say that I know on a personal basis. As far as their background, from whether that's I know them socially or in business. But I do agree with you with the general principle. There needs to be what I would call a level of familiarity. And that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody has to come from an impoverished background or has to have experienced some family or personal tragedy. What that means, and I think what the call is getting at, is that leaders and persons that are called to lead, who seek out information and put themselves in places to be able to learn, to be able to understand, to be able to empathize. I don't disagree with you at all, caller, because there are myriad challenges in our country, and being a politician is probably the second hardest job in the country. I do believe that being a Christian leader, a committed Christian leader who is very serious about evangelizing in this day and time, that's probably the hardest job in the country. And politician, being an honest, committed, caring politician, is probably the second hardest job, right? So I agree with you 100% on that. As far as the issue around border control, yes, the land issue is a part of the border control issue. But the reason why I say I am very much concerned about border control is due to the fact that we have the inflow, right? We can talk about what we're going to do, but unless we can actually get a grip on the fact that there are, for all intents and purposes, on a net basis, no more additions to the issue that we have, it makes it much easier. If you are eating a bowl of soup and somebody continues to ladle more soup into your bowl, no matter how you say that, you know what, I think I could do this, you're now eating more and more. So at some point, you're going to get full and you're no longer going to be able to deal with the soup. You're not going to be able to consume anymore. And I think that's kind of the place we are coming to with regard to our immigration influx. We have to actually curtail as much as possible and really as best as possible, come as close to eliminating inflows, illegal inflows. And all of our inflows that are illegal are not simply people coming on sloops that come here on plane tickets and overstay and find their ways to finagle some kind of residency or some kind of work benefit where they're able to be here and live here and work here for whatever reason, whether it's simply our own internal biases towards certain types of pigmentations and us favoring one set of pigmentation or one set of national origin or language origin over others. The fact remains that our immigration has to be reformed. This is not a Haiti problem that we have. The Haiti part of the problem, again, we empathize with the Haitian people and what's happening in Haiti, but that's only one end of the spectrum of immigration problems that we're having. And again, we also recognize the fact that there are immigrants, both legally here and illegally here, who are making great contributions. And that's why I say we have to have a vision around what we want the country to be. But as we collate that vision and we agree on that, somebody takes the initiative to put that flag down and have that debate. And that's one of the things that we don't do well in this country. Debate from a place of information and fact and be prepared to defend our position. Bahamians like to debate on emotion. We don't like to debate information. We don't like to debate logic. So we have to get to a place where we're going to be prepared to debate logic, debate information, debate vision, debate strategy. And as we're having that debate, we need to make sure that the door is closed. The window is closed. The gate is closed. The roof is not broken into. Right? There's no tunnel coming from outside the yard. All of that has to be done. And those things can happen simultaneously. So yes, I'm a believer of the fact that we have to close the borders. And at the same time, that does not, and it should not sidetrack us from having a productive discussion that does not unnecessarily and unfairly single out any group of persons. But this is the Bahamas. We prioritize Bahamian national development. Here is where we want to be. Here is the path for us to get there. And here is how our immigration policy is going to be inflected in that. Again, this is Z Live. We are here having an open line on Tuesday. And again, we have had a conversation around immigration. And obviously, it is a sticking point and is a sore point. But I want Bahamians to take heart. The very fact that people continue to come here tells us that by God's grace, this is a wonderful place to be. Bahamians should not. I repeat, if there's one thing you get from me, no one understands. Bahamians should not and should never be discouraged about being in the Bahamas. Yes, we have our challenges. But the beautiful thing is God has given us the ability to see them. And he gives us the capacity to think through. And he gives us the wisdom. And if we guidance by his Holy Spirit to be able to overcome them. So our issue is not an issue of a country where people don't want to be. Other people want to be here. That's why they keep coming and that's why they do whatever they can to stay here and get status. So we have to be very deliberate about what this country is going to be for us. And again, there's no need for xenophobia. We simply need to be deliberate about the vision. National development, and I'll say this again, is a process by which a people take planned, deliberate actions. They go through a planned, deliberate process to ensure certain specified improvements in their economy, in their society, and in their cultural character. That's what national development is. So if we don't like what we see in this place that everybody else is flocking to, we need to fix it because something special, God has made something special place. And we have to embrace that. I'm excited to be Bahamian. I don't want to be anywhere else. That's fact. Yes, we may not be the biggest, but as far as I'm concerned, this is the best. We had a slogan that we used to be very proud of when I was a child. It said, "Bad in the Bahamas." Even if we don't feel that that is the case in every aspect, we have a responsibility, not simply to sit on our hands and to wait for Superman. Because the reality is, Superman may not come. We may not get another Lyndon Penland, for those of you of that particular persuasion. And you may not get another Roland Simonet and Stafford Sands, for those of you who are that persuasion. Right? The development that occurred in the 50s, 60s, and 70s in the Bahamas, we may never see that again simply from what we would consider to be the leadership of the country deliberately in terms of one single act to, we cannot rely on personalities. There has to be vision. We got caught up in personalities and we continue to be caught up in personalities. Let's focus on visions. Let's focus on plan. Vision and planning and action. That's what will make it better in the Bahamas. We can say that again with pride when we focus on vision, planning, and action. Again, this is an open line Tuesday. We want you to call in whatever is on your mind. If you want to talk about anything, immigration has been the hot topic, national development. I came on and the thing that concerned me was inflation. I look every day and every time I go in the food store, concerned. I'm very concerned because I think that it must be the Holy Spirit and the angel of God who are with us in this country, because I cannot see how the folk on the fixed incomes that are prevalent in this country, at the levels of those fixed incomes, I don't see how people are surviving. En masse, it is a very tricky situation. And I'm not, again, I'm not blaming the government, because as I spoke to you about earlier, there are things outside of government control. The question I have for us is, knowing what we know and seeing the way that things are going internationally, what are we going to do? What are our thoughts? Let's not be emotional. Let's not blame the politicians. That's a hard job. I don't know that I would ever want that job, because if in our constituency you're responsible for, I don't know how many, 3,000 voters and their families, that's a lot of folk to be responsible for, who you have to, and you should be, and you've taken the oath to do your best on their behalf. That's a lot of folk. I have three in my house, myself, my spouse, and my daughter, and it's a lot to make sure that I take care of those two properly. And my hope is that I would have more kids, but we have to respect our leaders. But respecting our leaders does not mean that we should not have very deliberate, very focused conversations and debates around how we take advantage of the opportune time. Because if we continue to wait and we see what's happening in the world around us, how do we expect, if people are struggling now to buy the necessities of life, how do we expect, as this war in Ukraine rages on, and I've already explained to you the potential impacts that we're already seeing and that could be exacerbated with energy, with the Russian oil sanctions, with food, as far as both Russia and Ukraine being heavy, what we would call fertilizer exporters, and also the Ukraine being a heavy wheat exporter in the what we would call developing world, right? There are potential impacts that are going to roil the commodities markets in the months to come. What are we doing? I'm not crying wolf. I'm simply saying, if the Bible tells you, if you see a problem and you continue to go along that road without trying to figure out a way how you're going to get around that problem, or trying to take a different path, the Bible tells you you're a fool in Proverbs. I don't want my people to be fools. This is Z-Live. We appreciate everyone that's listening. This is Carlos Mackey sitting in for Chicago Line. We're almost at 3 o'clock. We're going to take our break. We got to pay the bills. But when we do come back, this is an open line Tuesday. Let's have that conversation and make sure that, again, we're having a debate around vision, around summation, not personalities, not emotions, but a debate where we focus on making sure it truly is better than the Bahamas. This is Z-Live. We'll be back after the break.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas. 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Babe, you mashed the car?
I ain't mashed the car. The lady run into me mashed the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull out the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
What risks do inflation, soaring energy prices, and global tensions pose to the Caribbean? Join international experts, local professionals, and policymakers at the 9th annual RF Economic Outlook. Be part of the conversation on March 14th by reserving your seat today at rfbeo.com. RFEO 2023 is proudly sponsored by RF Bank and Trust, Alive Doctors Hospital, Fidelity Bank, J.S. Johnson, PWC, and The Tribune.
Good day. Welcome back to Z Live, the Chicago Line. This is Carlos Mackey sitting in for Chicago today. And again, we want to thank all of you that are listening in. We're having an open line Tuesday today, and we want to hear from you. You can call in, you can text in. Feel free. We definitely want to make sure that everyone has their say. We've been talking about immigration reform. We've talked and touched on national development. You've also had, or I've made a few comments with regard to inflation and the choices also of what we will call international actions, international considerations, especially as we look at things like the war that's happening in Ukraine. So again, we want to give everybody the opportunity to chime in, get your perspective heard. And again, we want to have our conversation in a respectful way. We want to respect each other as Bahamians, first and foremost. We want to respect our leaders because, again, we may not feel that they're doing the best job, but we have to understand that being in leadership in any capacity is hard work. If you are the leader of somebody that has a car wash, it's very hard to keep your small business in line, much less an entire country and these various ministries that our folk have. So we want to always be respectful and mindful that, you know, leadership in this day and age is literally a 24/7 job. So let's be kind as much as we can and respect the office, even if we may not feel as though somebody's performing as well as they should. Let's respect the office. As we get back to our open line conversation, this issue of and so forth is very, very important. And I do think we are going to have to figure that out. And this is why part of what we will have to figure out will deal with the whole issue of immigration and what kinds of jobs our people are going to be prepared to take on. We have some texts coming in, and one text says it will be a time of reckoning if the Bahamas could allow a specific time for every registered person in this country to find themselves at a designated place and get registered. After this time, anyone found here who is not a Bahamian or unregistered should be deported to their homeland. And thank you so much, Texter. I actually have no problem with that. I think that we need to be fair. And again, the Bible tells us, and if we, in our preamble of our Constitution, which I believe is the most important part of our Constitution, our preamble says that we maintain an abiding respect for the Judeo-Christian values. With that being, the Bible tells us very plainly, we should not abuse, we should not mistreat the stranger that dwells among us. But it tells us very plainly that the stranger has to conform in order to become a part of the congregation. And that is what we have to decide. We don't have good conformance among Bahamians because we don't have an articulated vision for where the country is going. And I don't care about the fact that we don't have a national development plan that's agreed on. Quiet as it's kept, that's okay. We don't have a what I would call fully authoritarian system. We have, in some respects, soft authoritarianism dressed up as democracy, right? Because for 5 years in the Bahamas, once you've been elected, you're technically king. Or in the event that you don't call an early election, as we saw with the previous administration. Let's though, focus on the fact we do need to be very, very specific around what it is that we want the Bahamians, the Bahamas, to be for Bahamians. and would we want Bahamians as a people to represent? We have to decide that, yes, we want to represent this and that. I believe industriousness. I believe creativity. I believe that godliness is what we as a Bahamian people should exemplify. Yes, all of us sin and fall short of the glory of God. The Bible tells us if we say that we have no sin, the truth is not within us and we receive ourselves. I know my own frailties. I'm not in any way trying to say that Bahamians are going to be perfect. But I do believe that Bahamians and the Bahamas can and should be exceptional. And a part of that, like the text has said, is going to have to require that we actually take a full count of who is here. And in my opinion, we have to control the borders and stop the inflow. I have no problem with us treating the folk who are here fairly, but we cannot allow our borders to, in some respects, a pretty much open door and open gate. We have to stop that, and then we can deal with the regularization and registration process and figure out from there what the assimilation process, and some people may never, because in the Bible, as you read the Torah, the first five books, it tells you some people will never get a chance to become a part of the congregation. We will have to stipulate under what terms some people do and some people don't. That's the hard work of nation building, but I believe in the Bahamas and I believe in Bahamians. We can do that. We have a call on the line. Call, are you there?
Hello.
Call, are you there?
Yeah, good afternoon. This is Carlos Maki.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. Enjoying the show. I like the terminology. Soft totalitarianism disguised behind democracy.
I wouldn't say totalitarianism, but I would say soft authoritarianism for 5 years.
I think that's what you said, but you know, that's what they.
Yeah, no. That's no problem with that caller. What's on your mind?
But the thing is, I'm impressed with the conversation, but the border situation, I agree with you. But the thing is, I'm looking at what is done post illegal entry,
mm-hmm.
and the inactivity of the immigration department post arrival of immigrants, who's facilitating mm-hmm. them and what's going on now. I was moving in Chaboisin throughout the city, and I saw a number of them, and someone in the chat group said they see a number of them, and lo and behold, I saw exactly what they were saying. I saw all of them had envelopes in their hand. These are gold mm-hmm. envelopes, so I don't know what's going on at immigration. But, you know, the mm-hmm. thing is, I don't fear the migrants. I don't have a problem with a cosmopolitan society, right? Because that's mm-hmm. success, exchanging of ideas, cultures, etc. But then we have to look at us as being unique. We are a small population. And so then our approach should be different. We shouldn't have a global ventriloquist dictating to us what to do because we are a small country. But then when I see the government with this limited respect to people, then I don't really think they should, you know, I see respect as being mutual. I just can't respect someone who doesn't respect the people. And I go by what I see on the ground. They don't respect the Bahamian people. So they neglect the poor, but it seems to me if the poor immigrant, the poor migrant has more treatment, better treatment than the poor Bahamians. That's what I'm seeing on the ground. This is what it is, Mr. Maki.
And so
when we look at the arrival of the migrants and then we look at the immigration department not having a mechanism in place to really impede or to repatriate them. And then what is the point then? And then so Mr. Bell made a statement that I keep dwelling on. Fraudulent documents they uncovered used to obtain legitimate documents, right? So seeing that they had found this out, what are they doing as a result of that? Are they making these documents issued using false documents, non-valid? He said he was warning the justice of the peace, the lawyers, the priests, etc. And so this is what is disturbing for me. Who are these people selling their country out? Corruption and immigration and all of the various government entities that, for me, seems to be a soil or a substrate for corruption. Not everybody's corrupt, but it is what it is. I don't know who's corrupt. It doesn't matter, but corrupted is what is going on. And it's very inglorious. And so let me look at the numerology of the Haitian migrants. Why can't we look to other demographics, Guatemalans, Mexicans, for labor? Why? Why? Why not? Is there something going on that the government is trying to hide from the Bahamian people now? If you go to the United States and you submit a fraudulent document to obtain a green card or whatever, et cetera, you know what time it is over there, right?
Automatically.
What I'm saying is what is going on over here. What are we doing?
Absolutely.
We're just sitting and talking. And so you said something very important. So I was trying to find out, then you said that once we elect the people, it's pretty much over until the next 5 years. But what is it? I didn't even get to see if the professor answered my question on how, but what is the constitutional legal framework for us to have a vote of totally a king, like after they already voted? And Chivago made the same statement too last week, and I agreed with him. So to me, I don't really see what's the point. You know, it's just like you said, no. We have a king after we elect them in, and they do what they want.
Yeah.
And then if you oppose them, there seems to be a political gang culture that victimizes and criticizes, and they can't accept criticism, and they have this holy endowment, this pump and pageantry attitude, as if, to me, it seems to be a curse of education in which they think they are beyond reproach and infallible, in which they are not. And it's ridiculous. It's not. It's inglorious. Bless up.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you so much, caller, for your call. So I want to address the issue of what we are going to be able to do. So first and foremost, I agree with you that we do have to fix the whole thing, and there is, or there should be, a legal remedy. The framers of our constitution did not necessarily make much legal remedies in there for removal of a parliamentarian. There are things in there, if you are of a crime or are considered to be bankrupt and so forth, then yes, there are ways to remove under that. But an interesting part of the constitution that we don't have a lot of public debate on, or we've not had a very fulsome public discussion on, is the Constitution charges the Prime Minister and the Cabinet with good governance. My view is that next constitutional amendment that needs to come forward doesn't need to be about citizenship, doesn't need to be about gender equality. So the feminists out there, I apologize, but that's not the priority for me. The priority for me is good governance. We need to, as a people, define what good governance represents, even if we can only define the principles of good governance. And that's probably really and truly the only thing we'll be able to agree in any serious consensus on. Let's agree what we consider to be. We've had Mr. Ingram, we've had Mr. Christie, we've had Dr. Minnis, now we have, right? And we've had other aspirants. And every one of them can have a different definition right now of what good governance represents. So for us, in my view, the next thing that we need to advocate for, and to the call, I want to say that where we are able to is to change policy and to get our governments to listen is in the process of advocacy. Our governments don't take things serious here in the Bahamas until we actually march. And it's unfortunate, right, that the last, what we would call, significant protest movement that we had several years ago, at the end turned out to be a stepping stone for somebody's political career. But I think we must not throw the baby out with the bathwater. The very fact that Bahamians were prepared to mobilize, and if again, way separate and apart from the rejection of a, what I would call, force-fed set of issues in a couple of referenda, right? Separate and apart from that, because I think that's important that Bahamians, even with, they could talk about low participation all day. The fact that there's low participation and the issue still lost when one particular side is very vigorously spending and outspending the other side tells us a lot, right? So that's a separate discussion that we could have on that. But the fact that we don't in this country literally say, you know what, we're going to congregate peacefully and list. And that was an organization, that movement at that time listed what their particular concerns were. And it was very vocal about it, and they had persons from different walks of life. It just turned out to be, unfortunately, that certain persons use it as a political stepping stone. But again, that to me is a pretty significant way of getting governments to actually listen. Now, I know there's a debate around what's happening in the most recent times with regard to particular groups. I'm not going to discuss the differences, but there are differences if you pay close attention with regard to the 10 and the strategy that certain groups are using. I, again, approach whatever conversations we're going to have with our leadership from the perspective of the office and the office that anybody holds on behalf of the people, and the government deserves respect. The government may do things that are not worthy of their office and of their responsibility. They have a sacred trust, but we should not use that as an excuse to be wholesale disrespectful. That's my personal opinion. You don't have to agree. I don't expect you to agree. But one thing I could tell you is I'm prepared to fight and die so that you and I could freely disagree and hopefully freely come to consensus. We have some more texts. This one text says, great show as usual. Thank you so much, Texter. Then they're talking about the war. The war, that there are billions of dollars made in war and in chaos, and certain people were itching for a war in order to make money in arms dealing for years. Very good point. The former U.S. president, deceased president, former military general, Ike, President Ike pretty much said, hey, be very mindful of the military-industrial complex. And that was one of his parting speeches. And I don't know that in America and in the world generally, we have taken his good advice to heart. But thank you so much, Texas, for that. Another Texas says, good afternoon, sir. NATO's expansion eastward from Germany and since 1991 has caused this mess. The USSR in Cuba in 1962 was a red line for the United States. Texas, thank you so much for bringing up that point of information. And this is why information is important. There are people, Bahamians and even Americans and even American columnists who have written about a play. If NATO is going to encroach and get that close to Russia's borders, would the United States or would other world powers in their various regions be comfortable with Russia establishing military bases, or with even China, as we see there's a lot of concern now, with China establishing military and other bases and military partnerships with persons? Particularly, do we think that China and Russia would be allowed to establish military presences here in the Bahamas? This is not a conversation on the merits of one form of government and whatever. I've always said that for whatever disagreements we may have about the way or the unevenness sometimes of U.S. foreign policy, on the balance of it, I am extremely grateful for the fact that America has been the superpower during my lifetime. I have had the benefit of being educated in America twice by the benevolence of American, and have no personal complaint with America. But as an objective observer and as a student of history, let's be real. There was a red line in 1962 that literally almost led to nuclear war. Is our expectation reasonable that there would not be a similar red line for Russia? Just a question. This person says, good afternoon. If the job is hard, then it's not for you. What's hard about leading this country? They don't write laws. All you have to do is make sensible choices. Texa, to an extent, I agree with you. I'm not saying that the job is hard from the perspective of you don't know what to do. The reason I think that the job is hard is that there are lots of what we would call historical compounding issues that have to be resolved. And even right down to the fact that you as a minister or a parliamentary secretary have to rely on others in these large organizations that have varying levels, and excuse my phrasing, there are varying levels of inertia. And some would even go as far to say necrosis. That we expect that organizations will change and enliven simply because the person at the top changes. And that's what I mean when I say, in some respects, it's difficult, because there can be, these organizations are so complex that for a lot of people who are first-time ministers especially, there are so many different moving parts, and we have complications in how we run government, that it probably takes a lot of them, maybe the first 2 years or 3 years, just to even learn how to get something done efficiently in their ministry. So I'm simply saying, let's approach it from the perspective of assume that they're trying their best, even though the wheels of government, as we know, do move slowly. But I agree with you. The first and foremost thing is our people have to be prepared in leadership, simply to approach leadership from the basis of right and godly principles, and off of those principles, making sensible choices based on the information that's available to them. And I agree with the tech. We're pretty much already on the right course. Again, vision is important, and I don't yet see that we have espoused a long-term vision for this country. But to your point, principles and choices will make up for a lot. We have another text that came in that says, anyone found fraudulently selling out our country should be charged, and if guilty, should be given jail time. I agree with that 100%. And I'm telling you, if we want to advocate for something with regard to immigration, I'm not even advocating that we beat up on why the immigration officers at this point in time, not yet, why we don't see the kind of vigorous enforcement in certain places. What we do need, though, in my honest opinion, is we need a proper accounting of every single type of work permit that is issued, who applied for it, or at least why it was applied for, and what is, whether or not, we don't need to get into details of somebody's income, but whether or not, from what we're able to track through the various system, whether or not what the immigrant is supposed to live off of, what they are earning, and what they are sending out of this country, whether those things line up. I think that, to me, would be an extremely important data set that would help us to be able to understand what's happening in our country and set some good policy around how we manage the people who are here. Because managing the people who are here is a very separate conversation from managing control of the borders. We do recognize again that this is a open line Tuesday. We have another call. Call, are you there?
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Doing great. It's always a pleasure to hear you on the radio and also to contribute when you are on the air.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you so much. Carlos, go ahead, caller.
Let me make my statement very clear here. You know, any persons who represent the government, okay, yes. I'm talking about the government, i.e. the Bahamian people. I'm not talking about the 38 in parliament. I'm talking about representing the government. Anytime that our representatives, when you really want to know whether they care for your best interest, is when they do what is best in the best interest. All of these work permits you see, all these work permits that you see that's going on is nothing but a cash cow. They are disregarding the education, the intellectual. They're disregarding all of the knowledge and the expertise of our people in order to make money through the work permits. A caring representatives representing the government would mean that they would do what it takes to ensure that its citizens or the persons who are under them in terms of the citizenry are first and foremost taken care of. Make sure that they are employed. Make sure that they are looked after in terms of health care. Make sure that they are looked after in terms of anything that it pertains to this country where our citizens benefit, including this one here, so far has not done due diligence in ensuring that the organic Bahamians are put first in this country. I understand that the work permits is a cash cow, it's a money-making machine. But how do we get our people to live comfortably in this country if the persons who are here with all this knowledge, all this education, cannot rightfully be paid at the rate that it takes to live in this country. The minimum wage is nothing but an undercutting of our society. It diminishes and it minimizes us as a people. It's hard to live in this country where the taxation is so high and the living conditions and the salary conditions that many Bahamians, 20,000 a year is no money, all right? 21,000, they use that as a bar that if you make 22,000 a year, which is, I would say, close to minimum wage, it's nothing in this country. Anytime you start talking about 35,000 and beyond, okay, you can begin to live comfortably. When I say no government, no representatives that sits in our parliament have done justice in ensuring that our Bahamian people live comfortably in this country. And until I hear that,
hold up, before you go, because this is a very interesting part of the conversation, and I want us to go back to this. And this is why, for me, one, I agree with you from the perspective of, and I will say this again, we have to have information around what is going on, clear, verified information on what's going on with work permits. Why? Because you can't change anything that you don't measure, and you cannot measure anything that you don't track and properly record.
Exactly.
Right? So we need to have that. But the other side of this, and this is why I talk about vision, I am of the view, if you look at where our country is, our country has a workforce, workforce of persons who, as far as we understand, are legally here and participating, whether they are citizens. It is estimated that our country has about 150,000, 160,000 people in its workforce, right?
Yes.
And our GDP per capita and average wage is somewhere, as you say, in that $25,000 a year range, right?
Yeah.
The problem I have with that is that we have accepted that as a country. I personally have a problem with that, and I'll tell you why. We are a $12 billion GDP country. You have one company that I will give an example of, Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
Goldman Sachs is a financial company. We have a whole financial industry that maybe employs 8,000 to 10,000 people, and that's being generous. That's including literally everybody that does anything in finance and accounting, I think, right? So you're talking about a situation where one company is able, with 150,000 people, to pay their people on average $75,000 a year.
Thank you so much, my brother.
And we live in a country where we get to make laws and decide policy, and we've accepted that off of $25,000 a year. That's problematic.
That's shameful.
That's
really shameful. But I'll close on this one note here. You know, you talk about leaders who are visionary.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I don't see many of them. Let me explain what I mean by that. God has strategically placed the Bahamas in a position that, regardless to what goes on around the world, the Bahamas is in the crosshairs. We are in the center of it. The shipping industry in this country, it has to traverse the Bahamas. In order to get to the west, from the east to the west, you got to come through the Bahamas. North to the south, you got to come through the Bahamas. In fact, the Bahamas is the gateway. And this is what it said, the gateway to the world. So how is it that our visionary, our people who seem to have the vision, or let me reverse it, how is it that we could be in this position and this country cannot be, even though a lot of people would regard us as not being first world, the potential of us being first world is already here. Because we can take advantage of just about everything on this planet if we only have visionary people who care about our citizens and care about the Bahamas. We could be one of the most wealthiest nations on the face of this planet.
Caller, before you leave, I want to ask you a challenge question. I am of the opinion that we need to take one set of children from kindergarten through high school, preferably all the way through undergrad, but one set of children from kindergarten through high school. So let's call that a 15-year parliamentary term. If we had a structured national vision in place, for 15 years, I am of the view that country would not only be a first world country, we would be a world leading country. What's your perspective on that?
My perspective on that is we see many examples of what you espoused just now. We see many examples of that around the world. Let's look at China. China starts with the young children, at grooming them. China's one. We look at places like Australia. In essence, what I'm saying is, and you're absolutely correct, if we put a comprehensive plan in place, whereas we begin to teach and train our children from small, from little, even from kindergarten, and keep on grooming them, it is potentially possible that we can get what is required for our kids to be leaders in their own country. And also on the backhand of that, let me close on this note. This is why it's so important, even right down to our Supreme Constitution. Isn't it ironic that our Constitution is not taught in schools? Isn't it an irony that our Constitution is not taught in primary school or even in junior high school or senior high school? When you stop at that gap, why is it that our Constitution, the United States, does it for their citizens? Why is it that the Bahamas has not yet embarked in allowing the education of our citizens to understand what the Constitution, which means that it can be adjusted as time goes on? Why is it that our parliamentarians are not even adjusting? Why is it that they're not really touching the fabric of our Constitution to bring it to a standard that it could be beneficial for our people in this day and time? Why? In order to control the people, you must keep them lackluster and backward and stupid. And I started to put it like that, but then that's the way how it is. But thank you so much for taking my call, and continue the great work.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, caller. And I'll tell you, I do believe in constitutional education. I believe that it should be a mandatory part of education all the way. So civics, as they, I think, used to call that kind of learning, teaching behavior, history, and law, and what I would call cultural responsibility, that's what civics should be. Behavior, law, behavior, history, behavior, cultural responsibility, and environmental responsibility, right? If that's what we do focus on, I think we would be in a better place. Addition to what you said, caller, is this. I am not a fan of the Constitution being necessarily adjusted from the perspective of changing, because the Bible tells you to be very careful to change the ancient landmarks that your fathers have set. What I do believe is that if everybody knew the Constitution, the policies that are embedded in our laws could be changed. I don't know that we have much adjustment to make on the Constitution. It's my personal view. My view is that the laws that are passed, our legal code that stems and is based on the fact of whether or not these laws are in compliance with the Constitution, the laws that we actually make to govern day-to-day life in this country are not fit. And in a lot of respects, they are incongruent with the principles expressed in the Constitution. That's my personal view. But I definitely appreciate you, caller. And I do think we have a common cause and common perspective on what needs to happen. We do have some more texts that are coming in. This person says, good show, thank you. Wissa pointed out, how is it that America can claim that countries thousands of miles away, like Iraq and Syria, etc., are a threat to their security? But when Russia, after years of warning, defends itself against NATO expansion, who is supplying weapons to a country directly on its border, it is a huge wrong, and what a double standard. Very interesting perspective, and that's why I say, do you have to look at both sides? And let's be objective. Yes, all of us love our benefits of American, what we would call exceptionalism, and I want America to continue to be exceptional. But if we're having a genuine conversation, let's simply try to see it from somebody else's perspective. And that's all, because as we traverse this world, there are going to be people who our country and who we as individuals and business persons and students do business with, who we interact with, and there will be differences of perspectives. And a part of us being in this international community, I don't consider myself this whole garbage about international citizen. I'm a Bahamian citizen. This international citizen garbage, I'm not into that. Bahamas first. I love the Bahamas, right? But as we interact with the other people, we need to have what we would call fulsome perspectives. And to some people, the Russians have a valid perspective. We have another very interesting text. This text says, what is the role of the Governor General? How is this role relevant when the power it has is, when it has the power to course correct these administrations? This and the Chief of Police need to be elected roles so they are less compromised regarding integrity and actually earn the pension they are just sitting around for. Very, very, very interesting perspective. The Governor General, I'm not as concerned, as it were, with the Governor General being elected. I do think that in our current constitution, it is pretty much a fairly ceremonial role. I think what our real issue is that at the chamber that provides what we would call the backstop from the House of Assembly, and where what the House of Assembly puts forward is properly reconsidered. I am of the view that the Senate is failing because we pretty much stock the Senate with persons who have not won their seats or persons that we want to grant some kind of political favor to who have been good to the party and we want them to have a level of prestige, or we stock it with persons who are, in our view, supposedly rising political stars and we want them to be able to get a certain amount of airtime. That's not what the Senate's purpose, in my view, is supposed to be. The Senate is really supposed to be, in my view, or let me rephrase it, regardless of what we may think the Senate would be, my preference would be the Senate to be a place of what we would call experts. Experts who have experience in the two-party system, and the callers have indicated we have to begin to make decisions and take actions for the best interests of the country. It is in the best interest of the country for us to be focused on having experts debate some of these laws that legislators, and we still have a preponderance a large proportion of our legislators being lawyers, and that's fine. But they are often legislating and debating things on which they are not subject matter experts. So let's get specialists like engineers and architects and persons who are historians and linguists, whatever it is. Governments need to prioritize and say, administrations need to say, here is our Senate slate. This is why we think that they will help us to be better at our job in the House of Assembly. That's my perspective. Let's get experts in there and actually be able to say, this person as a experienced accountant, they've been a senior accountant in business or in public practice for X amount of years. This person, this banker, this person, this doctor, this person, this former newscaster, here is why we think this person brings a particular value to this chamber that will help us to do our job better. But right now, we just stalk it with persons that have specific political purposes, not necessarily the best governance purposes. It's my personal view. You may disagree. The Governor General, I will tell you, I believe that role actually should be outside of the foreign affairs. That should be the ambassador in chief. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. I think one of the greatest losses that the Bahamas have suffered, and you could say whatever you want to say about it, it's your opinion. One of the greatest losses we suffered as a country was the unexpected passing of Dr. Miles Monroe. And I'll tell you why I say that. Could you imagine somebody who is as Dr. Monroe in Government House? Think about that. Think about when foreign dignitaries come to the Bahamas and they are here for whatever, that Dr. Monroe is somebody who in his private, not private, but in his professional life as a preacher and minister and author and public speaker has been to so many different places. What he is able to do in terms of building relationships in that role of Governor General, because if it's going to be ceremonial, let's make the most out of the ceremonies. When people come here to this country and when we talk about the seat of government, and you have to think about it from the perspective of that place, that role should be a more active and more vigorous role. Not simply signing documents. But I think, in my personal opinion, Dr. Monroe would have been somebody excellent to be Governor General. There are others, right? You could have been an excellent Governor General. We have to think more broadly. What is it that we're trying to achieve as a nation? And who is it that is going to allow us in whatever creative way? We have to think outside of the box. If we say we want to be in a world championship with the, as we would call them, first world countries, yes, we don't necessarily have to be in the super heavyweight fight. We can be creative and be a middleweight champion. A lot of us remember Sugar Ray in the same way that we remember Muhammad Ali. A lot of us know Floyd Mayweather in the same way that we look at Joe Frazier. If your skill and your creativity and what you do is good enough, the Bible says your gift will make room for you. We as Bahamians have to think differently and broadly. You can think whatever you want to think about. Don't not deny is that at one point in time, from the mid-90s, almost up until his death, he was probably, outside of athletes from time to time, the most famous Bahamian on the planet. Similarly, Sir Sidney, at one point in time, for a few decades, as he was a Hollywood, active in Hollywood, very active in Hollywood, the most famous Bahamian on the planet. And these are two men who had the wherewithal to be able to execute that office. Because as the text has said, they're not really doing anything. But when we say execute that office, I'm talking about them being the resident ambassadors in chief. For when people think about the Bahamas, we can put them on a poster. You can put them on a postcard. You can put them on a stamp. And people will say, Sidney Poitier, Miles Monroe. Those guys are state in the Bahamas. That's powerful. At least it is to me. Not sure if we have any more calls. I know we're getting down. If you do want to call in, text in, feel free. I think we have time maybe to take one more call. We can still take some more texts. Again, we want to think about our country creatively. There are people in this country who have the capacity to be world leaders in their field of domain. But we as a people have to be more deliberate about how we empower each other in those ways. We have to be more deliberate. I am personally of the opinion that this country is the very best place for us to be, and we have so much potential, not because of our sun and sea. Those are environmental factors that God has blessed us with. The number one thing that God has blessed the Bahamas with is creativity in its people, a respect for order in its people, common sense as a what we would call abiding trait among its people. I don't know, is that a call on the line? Everybody. Is that a caller? think we may have lost that caller. Okay. I believe in the Bahamas. I'm sorry, I'm unapologetic about that. No matter what's happening in the world, I believe in the Bahamas. But I do know that we have to be very mindful. And again, we talked about the war. Let's also be mindful of what's happening around the world. There is, unfortunately, lots of, separate and apart from pain and difficulty, we want to keep our hearts and minds on the folk that would have recently, there have been a number of earthquakes that have happened around the world. And we need to keep those people in our thoughts and prayers. And, you know, I've never been, especially if it's, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning, as we say, and the entire place is shaking and it's so violent that you can't even, if you're sitting down, you can't get up. If you are laying down, you can't get up. You can't, you know, get yourself anywhere to any safety. You simply just have to pray and hope that if the building does collapse, that you're not crushed in the carnage of that shaking. So let's keep those persons in our thoughts and prayers. And we do need to take a very quick break. Let's take this break and we'll come back and wrap up very, very quickly.
With so much going on in the world today, only accepting cash at your business can be risky. Let Fidelity offer you and your customers safety, convenience, and the flexibility of a fixed or mobile terminal. Take it with you. On the move. More details. Speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit us at any of our branches.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. Buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Want to reach your Grand Bahama customers? Then call Barefoot Marketing at 827-4578 or message them for ad rates via their Facebook page. Advertising opportunities now include classified ads too. Keep up with all the latest Grand Bahama news in the Nassau Guardian newspaper every Tuesday.
Get your Charifta tickets. The 58 Charifta Games is coming. April 7th to April 10th. Tickets are on sale now. Online at charifta50.com or at the Thomas A. Robinson National Stadium, Western Grand Entrance. For more details, email tickets051.
What risks do inflation, soaring energy prices, and global tensions pose to the Caribbean? Join international experts, local professionals, and policymakers at the 9th annual RF Economic Outlook. Be part of the conversation on March 14th by reserving your seat today at rfbeo.com. RFEO 2023 is proudly sponsored by RF Bank and Trust, Alive Doctors Hospital, Fidelity Bank, J.S. Johnson, PwC, and The Tribune.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid, to take a stand, Everybody, come take my hand, We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
We're just here wrapping up in this last minute Z Live with Shibago Lang. I'm Carlos Mackey sitting in for Shibago. And we just have a couple of texts that came in. We can't take any calls at this time. This person says, Mackey, I believe you made a statement devaluing the importance of the National Development Plan. I disagree. I think a bipartisan NDP is of the utmost importance, and it is impossible to build a structurally sound country without a living building blueprint, which outlines the detailed specification required for a good build outcome. So, Texas, thank you for that. I don't devalue, and I apologize if it seems that, but what I do mean is this. I don't believe that if we don't have full consensus on a national development plan, that those that seek to lead us should not be able to cast a vision about where they, in their own perspective, think that the country should get to. And that's what we've been missing. We get a lot of five-year things. I don't want to call it garbage or trash or tripe, but we don't get a lot of what I would call substantive thought from those that seek to lead. I don't want people to use the fact that we have not got our leadership, but I do thank you. Yes, a national development plan is extremely important. It needs to be bipartisan, but it should not be a crutch, and lack of consensus on it should not be a crutch for leaders being able to espouse a clear vision. This last text says, I agree regarding the way the Senate is supposed to run, but my point is that the Governor General, my point about the Governor General, excuse me, is the first on rules we waste money on. If it is clear that the Governor General rules ceremony, then okay. But if that is only because we bastardize the position as we do with the Westminster system, then we need to fix this. Fully agree with you. Like I said, I believe we can make the role much more ambassadorial. Or if there are local concerns, we can make it much more humanitarian to achieve particular aims in this country. Focus on education, focus on healthcare, focus on social work. I believe that the Governor General role can be more vigorous, and it should point to the priorities that the government has during a particular term or a particular part of the term, but that's me. I agree with you, though. We simply can't, or we simply should not be in pension just because we want to pay a political favor, and neither should we do that with the Senate as well. We're out of time today. We want to thank everyone for listening. We hope that this has been a good conversation. Again, we want our conversations to be objective. We want them to be based on as information and facts as much as possible. Yes, we all have our opinions, but let's express them respectfully. Remember, the Bahamas is our home, and it must, can, and should be the very best place to live in the world. But we can't simply talk about it. We have to think about it. We have to do something about it. God bless you all. This has been Carlos Mackey sitting in for Zhivago Live, for Zhivago Line on Z Live. God bless you all. God bless the Bahamas. Take care.
I just can't keep living this way. So starting today, I'm breaking out of this cage. I'm standing up, I'm gonna face my demons.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.